Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Another very important broadcast transmission lined up for you as we blast out on the AM and FM dial, Global Shortwave, XM, number one talk radio show online in the world as well. Thank you so much for joining us. It is a great testament to the global awakening that's happening that the listenership of this transmission is exploding. As more and more people begin to tune into reality and serious issues, not the NCAA, not pro football, not the topless bars, but issues that actually affect our society. The global criminal elite that has been running wild because people have not been standing up to them. But the resistance is mounting. The battle is joined. It is Thursday, the 24th day of March, 2011. And about a week before the devastating earthquake and tsunami leading to one of the biggest nuclear crises in modern history since the nuclear age began, I had already set up Joel Skousen to come on. In fact, it was 3 or 4 days before the earthquake that hit 13 days ago. It'll be 2 weeks tomorrow. We had set up Joel Skousen for the radio broadcast. He's an expert. He's, of course, a former Vietnam-era fighter pilot. He is a political scientist and an expert on the globalist. But he's also written this huge book, Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, third edition. This is the new edition that just came out, and it gets into the nuclear test sites from the past. It covers the wind systems, tectonic earthquake issues. He'll be joining us to go through this book in great detail and share his knowledge with us coming up in T-minus 1 hour 30 minutes. Now, that said, we've got massive important news that I'm going to attempt to at least graze over when we come back and then try to get more into the details of each stack. Obviously, earthquake has hit Myanmar near China and Thailand borders. A 6.8 magnitude quake strikes northeast Myanmar. One dead so far, showing more tectonic activity, obviously intensifying. We're going to be breaking that down. Also, more U.S. states find traces of radiation from Japan, and now Europe proper has reported radiation that's blown all the way from Japan over the Pacific, over North America, over the Atlantic, into Europe. Also, Fukushima radiation releases rival Chernobyl. Many mainstream reports and scientists are now confirming, but they're just kind of letting that news slip out there to the public. Global food scare widens from Japan nuclear plant, that out of AFP. Fukushima directories continues to deteriorate. Fukushima deteriorates again as steam, it's actually smoke, now rising from reactor 1 for the first time, including all other reactors. Reactor 5 cooling fails. Those are reactors they'd supposedly shut down successfully. Japanese only estimating radiation, not actually measuring it. We now learn why they won't ever give us numbers and why the Pentagon won't give us numbers, though they're in and around that area with very sophisticated, sensitive equipment that can pick up not only background radiation, like a Geiger counter, but the actual isotopes and what's coming out. They calmly reported in ABC News yesterday that ion beams, in fact, pull that out of my stack or give me the latest on ion beams, did a search on that. That's a big deal. I did some more research last night. That means that, especially in the MOX-1 reactor, the Mark 1, that it could be separating out. The plutonium will sink to the bottom, then the uranium, then the other isotopes. Then if there's an explosion, chain reaction can occur, and you will have a high-powered nuclear explosion, dirty bomb. You cannot have a worse scenario than this. This is a mega nuclear dirty bomb at the MOX-3, the reactor 3.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, I want to get into the latest developments in and around the Fukushima nuclear disaster in northeastern Japan. ABC News, Associated Press, the Kyoto News out of Japan first broke it. Powerful ion beams are being projected from one of the plants. Now other plants are smoking and boiling and on fire. There are hundreds of thousands of fuel rods thrown around in every direction. The situation is deteriorating very, very quickly. And at the number three reactor that blew up not this Monday, but the Monday before last, just 3 days into the disaster, we're now 13 days in, it is boiling, it is smoking, and its temperature has risen to above 400 degrees. That from aerial infrared snaps. And the Japanese, because of smoke rising from three of the reactors, had to evacuate the emergency crews yesterday. That hysteria is ongoing. Levels are well above 1,600 times safe levels. And as you know, last Friday, the director of the plant broke down and said he could no longer cover up the fact that this is deadly radiation enough to kill people. The Japanese government for now 13 days has refused to give readings from in and around the plant, but we know 20 kilometers away it's 1,600 times safe levels with the ion beams being projected. And at the number three reactor, the MOX Mark I General Electric reactor that uses weapons-grade plutonium in it, 7%, 93% uranium, we've had nuclear physicists on to break this down, but I did some more research last night and talked to some of my physicist sources, and they did confirm that what could happen if this heating continues is, and if the rods, the active rods continue to melt down, the plutonium will separate to the bottom, the uranium will be stacked on top of that in this slag heap, and then on top of that, the different other isotopes that are off-gassing will build up in stratas, and if any of those ignite, chain reaction could begin, as happened in the early 1950s in Russia at a rod cooling facility when they had a large nuclear explosion, not a hydrogen explosion, as we've been seeing. They claim it's only hydrogen explosions, but an actual nuclear chain reaction. So cannot underestimate how serious this is, that ion beams are now emanating from the Fukushima facility. An ion beam is a type of particle beam consisting of ions, and that's the worst type, ladies and gentlemen. Ion beams have, again, electrons, and I'm going to get some more of those articles printed off, and we're going to go over the different articles on the latest on ion beams. One of those computers is locked up, so we could print over there or put some of those on screen. But this whole situation is getting worse and worse by the minute. More and more radiation is drifting across Japan. The predominant winds are blowing out to sea to the east, towards the United States East Coast. Of course, there was another earthquake today in Myanmar near the China and Thailand borders. A powerful earthquake hit Myanmar today near its borders with China, Thailand, and Laos. The U.S. Geological Survey reported the quake hit the eastern Myanmar about 55 miles north of Chinig Ra, Thailand, the survey reported. It had a magnitude 6.8, the survey reported, revising the estimate down from an initial 7.0, so showing that we're having tectonic activity continuing. And all over the Western world, California, in the Midwest, in the New Madrid Fault Line, in Japan, in many other areas, nuclear reactors have been built, as you know, directly on those fault lines. But I've got some more information that I want to collate and get together before I go into my full report dealing with what's happening right now at Fukushima. And remember, while this is going on, we have a nuclear plant in Canada bordering the U.S. in one of the Great Lakes leaking massive amounts of radioactive water into the lake. Standard procedure to say it's safe and no big deal. We've got other reactors that reportedly had leaks in other areas of Japan. We never really see or hear anything on that front. Also, we're going to get into the latest on the economy and what's happening in Libya and the rest of the Middle East. On the economy front, Euro's collapse is not unthinkable, Warren Buffett says. So we've got that report that's coming up. We've got George Soros setting up a huge consortium of banking heads and brokerage firm heads to move away from the dollar and a new international currency order. He's blaming this on capitalism. He says that's the big enemy now, not communism. This isn't capitalism that's been engaged in by these bankers creating thousands of trillions in fake derivatives and then buying off governments to sign on to the debt that we don't owe. And so he's literally one of the players engineering this, now posing as the savior as well. So that is coming up. But first I wanted to play a little country music song that we were sent. It's up on Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com called Crazy Like Alex Jones. We're going to play that here in just a moment. And it's a music video that I think illustrates the fact that they call us crazy because we were right about the dollar implosion, because we were right about derivatives and the end of Glass-Steagall in 99, because we've been right about the lies about WMDs, because we've been right about the radiation danger being much greater from the naked body scanners. They try this conspiracy theorist crazy line as a way to discredit our information so people don't even look at it. Well, I embrace it. You want to call me crazy? Great. Crazy like a fox. And instead of people bowing down and saying, oh, no, I'm not a kook. Oh, no, we need to embrace it and say, no, you're the ones that are really crazy. So if you want to call us crazy, fine. Here is this great music video that Rob Dew put together with a great artist that sent us this old-fashioned country-style song, Crazy Like Alex Jones. Here it is.
Smithing and do all kinds of things.
You even sell guns.
We even...
rabble slave with a weapon. Disarm him. Get the guards. Disarm him immediately. Where's one of the slaves have a weapon? Crazy like...
I wanna be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones. And yet have an assumption without presumption to know what's going on. Then I can throw bananas at the global clowns and hear aristocratic moans. I wanna be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones. I went looking one day on the internet just to see what I could find. When I heard this talk show maniac just proudly speaking his mind, it was really wild, but the more I heard, it made a whole lot of sense to me. I want to thank you, Alex, for opening my eyes and helping the blind to see. I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones, and yet have enough gumption without a presumption to know what's going on. Then I can throw bananas at the global clowns and hear aristocratic moans. I wanna be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones. The talking heads on the TV screen with an arrogant sophistication, talking about what's been going on around the world and here in the nation. They all seem to turn like a pack of wolves when Alex goes on the air. In spite of the facts, they launch their attacks, and I just don't think it's fair. I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones.
having that gumption without a presumption that no one's going on. Then I can throw bananas at the global clowns and hear aristocratic moans. I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones. Yeah, I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones.
I'm your Christian leader. Never mind Skull and Bones. Never mind Bohemian Grove. Never mind my actual policies. Just buy my rhetoric, buy my lies, because you're my slaves. We're going to put in a Democrat later who works for the exact same people, and you're going to laugh at them when they do it. All you Democrats that hate the Patriot Act and all you Democrats that hate the police state, you're suddenly going to love it.
Visit Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. When you're on the site, you can also tune in 24 hours a day to my daily radio broadcast. There's also a free iPhone app to listen to the syndicated radio show when and where you want.
All right, Robert Ownby did that little country song, Crazy Like Alex Jones. And if you watch the video, if you're just a radio listener and not on PrisonPlanet.tv, you can go watch the music video itself at Infowars.com. And at the end, it's a clip from 5 years ago on my local Austin TV show where I dressed up in a George Bush mask with a pirate hat on. And I said, soon we're going to put a Democrat in and they're going to continue the Patriot Act and all the wars, the torture, the rest of it. And you people, you Democrats out there, you're going to love it because you're part of the left-right paradigm. So Rob Dew added that to the music video. For radio listeners, they may have been, what is he talking about there? Watch the video. You'll get it. We'll be right back with the ion beams and the fact that this could blow up like a nuclear bomb. Stay with us. We are back live. Thank you for joining us. Coming up in about an hour and 10 minutes from now, Strategic Relocation, North America Guide to Safe Places with Joel Skousen. He'll be joining us. I had this set up before the disaster even took place that we would do this special presentation today, but we'll also first get into some politics with him and get his view on what's happening in Libya and the whole North African situation, and that's coming up as well. But I wanted to go to Kyoto News first, and this has gotten in a few headlines here in the U.S. yesterday, but then no coverage since then, and it's a big deal. Because I looked into what neutron beams mean. It doesn't just mean that fusion is happening, or fission, but that there could be an explosion associated with this that's basically like a nuclear bomb going off, but extremely radioactive and dirty. Can you imagine? That place is a nuclear waste dump with 600,000 plus spent fuel rods and six reactors. And they've had more reactors, again, catch fire, begin smoking, cooling failing at number five that wasn't even online when the disaster happened. Neutron beam observed 13 times at crippled Fukushima nuke plant. This is from yesterday. Nothing new is out on this. Tokyo Electric Power Co. said it has observed a neutron beam, a kind of radioactive ray, 13 times on the premises of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant after it was crippled by the massive March 11th quake. Now, here's the big issue. And that is that that means that meltdown has basically occurred from the research I've done. And so it just shows that if you go back even 12 days ago, just 24 hours into this disaster, they were talking about partial meltdown in two of the plants, one and three, and then you saw those blow up. And I will repeat, the Mark I MOX plutonium-based reactor, the General Electric reactor, is the number one candidate to actually explode in a chain reaction. TEPCO, the operator of the nuclear plant, said the neutron beam measured about 1.5 kilometers southeast of the plant's number one and number two reactors over 3 days from March 13th. And it's equivalent to microsieverts per hour. And that's not a dangerous level, they say. Well, the point is that that plant is going into a critical phase. That's what the neutron beam means. The utility firm said it will measure uranium and plutonium, which could emit the neutron beam as well. in the 1999 critical accident at a nuclear fuel processing plant in JCO, CO, in the, another prefecture. Uranium broke apart continually in nuclear fission, causing a massive amount of neutron beams to be released. So that happened 12 years ago in Japan. It is the latest case at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. Such a critical accident has not yet happened, they're telling us. But the measurement of a neutron beam may be evident and evidence that uranium and plutonium leaked from the plant's nuclear reactors and spent fuel has discharged a small amount of neutron beams through nuclear fission. And that is out of the News of Kyoto, one of the major English publications out of Japan. Radionuclei has blanketed the United States, but the authorities are insisting that the levels are harmless, Paul Joseph Watson writes. And here's the big news. This is from Aaron Dykes at Infowars.com with links to CNN and other publications. Japan's chief cabinet secretary admits, we're not able to measure the amount of radiation coming from the power plant. That is a quote. They are just estimating it magically. Well, they are able to get measurements. And the Pentagon has got very expensive, high-tech devices that are very, very powerful in the ways that they can measure the full spectrum of different types of radiation and radioactive isotopes that are being released. Very, very delicate instruments, and we're not seeing any information now 13 days in from our own government that's charged with protecting us. In another astonishing clip in the wake of Japan's nuclear power plant crisis, Japan's chief cabinet secretary admits, and then we have a video link there, that they are not actually measuring radiation levels at Fukushima's nuclear power plant and cannot accurately do so. That's not true. But are instead only estimating the radiation via the use of computer simulation model. This is a fresh admission piling on top of what has already been a cover-up of massive proportions and coincides with a warning today that infants should not drink the tap water in the surrounding Tokyo area because levels of radioactive iodine are too high. Despite the lack of accurate measurements, the Japan Nuclear Agency reported that the highest levels of radiation yet from Fukushima Reactor 2, as well as 13 sightings of neutron beams radiation, is reportedly 1,600 times safe levels, according to the Kyoto News, CNN, and other major publications. And more U.S. states find traces of radiation from Japan, CNN is reporting.
We now take you live
to the Central Texas Command Center
in the heart of the resistance. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
We've got a lot of other news to cover. And no, it's not going to be about Elizabeth Taylor dying, as much as I liked her. She was a humanitarian. That does not affect the wider spectrum of what's happening on this planet. We've also got a lot of bizarre nanny state, police state news. The mayor pushes Washington for federal toilet paper tax. City bans girls from selling Girl Scout cookies, saying they've got to get a license to do that, to operate a business. Town examines cracking down on swing sets because they could be dangerous, just like they've banned dodgeball and then tag at most public schools. It's all part of the total tyranny in the name of safety. Federal government's moving to put boxes in all cars to track everywhere you go and what you do and tax you by the mile for your safety. They're also in the news talking about cameras in all cars, watching you in live time just in case you have a problem. The police will dial in and watch you. The Houston police chief has again proposed cameras in people's homes. They've now done that in over 22,000 homes in England. No criminal record, no presumption of innocence. They just say, when you have a new baby, we've got to put cameras in your house and watch you. Guilty until proven innocent. The total 1984 system is coming into play. We're also going to be getting into the economy. Basically, I've covered most of the new news dealing with what's happening in Japan, but the situation, to sum it up, to give me the Infowars.com analysis, is it's out of control. And when you've got six reactors, even the two they supposedly shut down, including five, smoking, having fires, black smoke pouring out, and clear ongoing meltdowns of the live uranium and plutonium, especially in the number three reactor, this is a recipe for disaster. And unfortunately, many physicists are saying, and radiation specialists, that the worst is probably ahead of us, and that if those plants have completely melted down, one or more, we know a cover-up is then going on. We don't know the extent of how big the cover-up is. There has been partial meltdown, and there could be huge explosions, not just future hydrogen explosions, but there could be a fission chain reaction nuclear explosion that will then project all of that radioactive waste dump that is the Fukushima facility and the live reactors sky high in a massive nuclear chain reaction that will not be pretty and will basically make much of Japan uninhabitable and will turn much of the Pacific into a radiation dump. But there's a reason cancer is up several thousand percentage points. And one of the big reasons in a cocktail of reasons is the thousands of nuclear tests that have been done total, 500 plus above ground, which were halted because of people demonstrating and putting pressure on their elected representatives. But it's just an example of how the globalists will even soil their own nest while running around preaching at us, telling the public that we have to give up our liberties, give up our freedoms because of the fact that carbon dioxide is so deadly when it's what plants breathe. Looking at some of this police state news, Hazelwood cracked down on Girl Scout cookies. CBS News is reporting on that. The city of Hazelwood says that they do support the Girl Scouts, but not when they are violating the home occupancy code. You've heard about people with lemonade stands getting fines. This is now unfolding across the country. But now they're saying Girl Scouts can't set up stands on street corners or in front of their homes because it violates the code. The illegal aliens can break every law under the sun, drive around drunk with no driver's license, and 800-plus cities are sanctuary cities. Government individuals across the board statistically don't pay their taxes. There's been some reports that upwards of half of the Congress doesn't pay their income taxes. They make themselves exempt from the health care laws they make for us, but then they teach our children that they're under a magnifying glass of bureaucratic Soviet-style control. The article goes on. They've been warned, but the city says the Girl Scouts who are continuing to sell Girl Scout cookies from the stand in front of their home. A neighbor complained anonymously because of all the people and the traffic and the dogs barking at all the people and the traffic. So a good see-something-say-something person might have watched Janet Napolitano at Walmart, you know, say, spy on your neighbors, and, well, they are spying. Just like the reports we get constantly about realtors in your house, and they see a gun case, they think guns are illegal, even though they're not, they call the police. Or realtors are in your house, and they see a reloading kit in your basement, they call the police. That's happened to one of our writers at Infowars.com. Or it's got to be 12 years ago now, the carpet cleaner trying to call the cops because he saw a shotgun in my house and thought it was illegal. It was black. It was scary. It looked evil. Based on this complaint, the city of Hazelwood has to take action, says spokesman Tim Davidson. He says it is also against city code to sell products from a home. So there you go, and they're going to have to crack down on the Girl Scouts. But I thought the Girl Scouts are key to Homeland Security. You can pull up Girl Scouts recruited for Homeland Security to keep an eye on their parents and others. Also, all over the country, you know, they're putting taxes on bottled water, saying plastic bottles are evil. And now the Omaha World Herald reports Suttle unrolls toilet paper tax. Mayor Jim Suttle went to Washington this week, flush with ideas for how the federal officials, not servants, could help cities like Omaha, Nebraska, pay for multi-billion dollar sewer projects. The government puts new regulations on the sewer systems, on the water treatment, and then the cities have to raise taxes to comply with that, and then private companies come in and offer to buy up the city-run system, and then they get waivers from the government not to put in the new systems. Based on the four-pack price for Charmin double rolls at the Midtown Hy-Vee, such a tax would add more than 10 cents per roll price, pushing it up over a buck per package. The idea came from a 2009 House measure by an Oregon congressman to help cities and the environment. So a tax on breathing, a tax on carbon dioxide, a tax on toilet paper, just like they want the salt tax in New York, and they're threatening huge multi-$1,000 fines. Mayor Bloomberg wants people to get in big trouble if they oversalt food at restaurants. Omaha estimates that the toilet paper tax would help them with their $1.7 billion bill for federally mandated sewer improvements. There you go with the sewer improvements. I'll be honest, I hadn't even read the whole article yet, but there it is, the federally mandated sewer systems, which then make them add more chemicals and more toxins because the laws are written by the big chemical industries to cause this consolidation. But don't worry. All over the country, they're training people how to be good little prisoners. And we have another report here. Parents could face fine for burying 10-month-old on their own property who died. I guess you got to get a special permit to put a family cemetery in. And a town examines swing set rules. We also have those reports coming out. Westport swing set rules get second look. Rules regarding swing sets and play sets in Westport will go under the microscope tonight in the Planning and Zoning Commission public hearing. Proposal was filed to make them exempt from current setback and coverage requirements. They're saying under a new law, unless they repeal it, that you've got to get special rules and inspections to be able to have a playset in your backyard. The text of the amendment made by resident Carrie Moskowitz seeks to change the definition of a structure to exclude swing sets and playsets, thus making them an exemption to set back the coverage regulations. Currently, swing sets and playsets must be placed at least 50 feet from property lines, but most people's backyards, again, it's impossible to do that. So, again, it's all Agenda 21. The UN writes these regulations to shut down farms, ranches, backyard gardens, play sets, and they're moving to phase basically all of that out in the name of continued safety. Meanwhile, I'm going to get more into Libya in a moment, but first I wanted to get into doublespeak, doublethink. In 2005, a member of the New Freedom Federal Board, New Freedom Initiative Board, that's an Orwellian name, broke their silence and released internal documents that the big pharma industry had financed the Bush administration to try to push a federal initiative to forcibly psychologically test all school children every year in every grade and then give them psychological illnesses so that later in life they can't own firearms. But also it was estimated that they would then convert in the next decade from roughly 12% of school children listed as mentally ill to 50% in the next phase, and then upwards of 100% after that. And WorldNet Daily, Associated Press, WorldNet Daily actually broke it, but Associated Press did pick up on it. What was it, back in 2005, or was it, you know, it was 2005. In there, they called it the New Freedom Initiative, the new freedom to be forcibly drugged. You're saying, what does that have to do with Libya? Well, they call it new freedom. They call the Patriot Act the Patriot Act, when it's the opposite of being a patriot and supporting the Bill of Rights and Constitution, Declaration of Independence that makes America special and such liberty that we've enjoyed, that we began the engine of total success and the example of liberty worldwide. There's another big Orwellian example here today. White House says Libya fight is not a war. Following what the French president has said, it's a kinetic military action. So bombing government buildings, bombing power plants, bombing airfields, bombing airports, bombing bus terminals, bombing infrastructure, hundreds and hundreds of cruise missiles, bombs dropping every hour on the hour, That is not a war. Okay, that is a kinetic military action. It was kind of like in Vietnam, they didn't like the seek and kill teams. So they started naming it seek and destroy, and then they didn't like that, so they changed it to seek and expunge, or seek and remove. And, of course, when SWAT teams were first set up by the CIA as a model to federalize and militarize police under Daryl Gates in L.A., I saw him in a SWAT team documentary. He admitted they were special weapons attack teams, but the politically correct said, no, let's call it special weapons and tactics. So just another example of that. And now in a briefing on board Air Force One last night, Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes took a crack at the answer. I think we are all doing is enforcing a resolution that has very clear set goals. Of course, it doesn't. NATO's even pointing out there's not clear set goals, which is protecting the Libyan people, averting a humanitarian crisis, and setting up a no-fly zone, Rhodes said. Obviously, that involves kinetic military action, particularly on the front end. And since then, the Pentagon is now calling this a kinetic military action. Slate also reports on the birth of a Washington word, and that is now the kinetic military action. Now, I don't know if I believe this new poll that's out, because I've seen other polls that show over 70% against the Iraq war, now in its eighth year, against the Afghan war, now in its ninth year, and the Pakistan war that's ongoing, that's undeclared. And don't forget, Congress wasn't even consulted, and Congress likes it. Congress, except for Ron Paul, a Republican, and a few Democrats, they love it. They go, this is great. The UN says jump, and the U.S. says how high? Completely unconstitutional. It's total treason. Many constitutional experts are out there calling it treason. And it's just an amazing precedent. But they've got this new poll out, Reuters reports. In U.S. polls, 60% back Libyan military action. Well, if 60% agreed that they could roast children on the White House lawn, or that if 60% said they could take the other 40%'s money and redistribute it, could you do that? No, not in a republic with laws, with rule of law. See, a pure democracy, 51% could vote to kill the other 49, or to make you wear blue hats, or make you dress up like an Easter bunny, or to take your property, or to raise taxes on you. I mean, the sky's the limit. But 60% of Americans support the U.S. and allied military action in Libya to impose a no-fly zone to protect civilians from forces loyal to Muammar Gaddafi, a Reuters poll released today found. Of those polled, 48% described President Barack Obama's military leadership as U.S. Commander-in-Chief as cautious and consultative. Oh, yeah. Do you again, that's the weird little way they spun the poll. 36% said that it was indecisive and dithering. No, it's slithering is what it is. And 17% as strong and decisive in a question that offered only those three choices. So, see, there is no choice. There you have it, where you could say that you didn't want the war. It's either how do you think he's handling it? So they're not debating, should we have this war, or is it even a war? They just said, you know, do you think it's indecisive and dithering, cautious and consultative, or strong and decisive? So all three of those, this is such a fraud. This should be a university textbook example of a push poll, of a fraudulent poll, where you don't ever give them any other opportunity. You give them false choices. Unbelievable. Unbelievable to have that type of deceptive poll. But see, now they can just run the headline that 60% back Libyan military action. They can just throw it out there and say 60% support it. Extreme deception out of that group of creatures. Continuing here with the news before I get back into Libya, there's the larger question that right after Obama got in office, he was given the Nobel Peace Prize. In fact, guys, pull up when he was given that, because memory serves. I think he was given it when he was president-elect. He hadn't even gotten in office, but let's see if my memory's correct. He got in He got into office in January of 2009. They secretly voted on it 6 months before. That was, I mean, but just pull up the Wikipedia on it or an AP article or something, because I want to be absolutely, in fact, we'll have the answer when we come back. But the point is, he got it before, yeah, but the date, I know it was 2009. So it was announced on October 9th. So he'd been in office a while, but then it turned out they'd given it to him when he was president-elect. So memory does serve. So they'd already decided to give it to him, and then he got it a few months after being in office. And has he engaged in peace since then? Well, there's a move to strip him of it. But, I mean, if you give it to Henry Kissinger, a huge warmonger, why not? Why not give it to Hitler posthumously? I mean, come on. Why stop there? Bolivian president has demanded, as you know, several days ago that Obama return his Nobel Peace Prize. He's intensified the wars in Afghanistan, Pakistan, lied, and simply renamed combat brigades in Iraq as combat support brigades. War is now kinetic action, kinetic military action. You're just not allowed to call it a war. And continuing... So Evo Morales, the Bolivian president, is demanding that Obama give back his Nobel Peace Prize. He claims that the Libyan attack is so horrible, our president no longer deserves the prize. Snorts Morales. How is it possible that a Nobel Peace Prize winner leads a gang to attack and invade? This is not a defense of human rights or self-determination. And he demanded that hand back the Nobel Peace Prize, and Obama responded in Politico, Obama is keeping his Peace Prize. President Obama defended his Nobel Peace Prize, saying that Americans don't see any contradiction. He speaks for all of us. See, it's all lies. It's all 1984 Orwell speak out of the Ministry of Truth. War is peace, freedom is slavery. President Obama defended his Nobel Peace Prize, saying that Americans, quote, don't see any contradiction. We don't. I guess I don't see any contradiction, or you don't, because Obama said so. Okay. In him ordering an attack on Libya to make sure, quote, people aren't butchered because a dictator wants to cling to power. And now with riots and burning and shootings in Syria, there's talk about humanitarian bombing. The globalists to go in, stir up people. To resist these countries that I certainly don't want to live in. But the point is that they're globalist enemies. But then Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and other Arab countries that are globalist minions, when they shoot people down on video, confirmed. Much of the Libya stuff's turned out to be lies. I have no doubt he's not engaged in all sorts of butchering. So are the rebels. I'm afraid there won't be any attack. I'm afraid that... these are our allies all over Yemen and the rest of the Middle East. So you heard it. He says Americans don't see any contradiction. All of us support what he is doing and think that this is just absolutely wonderful. But there's trouble in paradise. We don't have time to play the whole clip, but Donald Trump yesterday on The View skewered the Skeksis tells Obama to show the birth certificate. And look, if you want to join the FBI, you got to show the original. If you want to, join the military, you got to have it unless you get a waiver. And if you want to join the CIA, you've got to, or you want to get into the State Department, but not if you want to be president. And they now admit, after years of denial, that no, he's not released the birth certificate. He's released a receipt of birth certificate. And then remember 3 months ago, Abercrombie was getting ready to go into office. And he said, when I get in office in Hawaii, I'm going to release it. And then he came out and said, well, we couldn't find it. And we're told Obama was born at two different hospitals. And they go, well, there was an announcement by his grandparents. Well, if he was born in Africa and they wanted to try to dummy up the records later and claim he was born in Hawaii, that's a standard fraud to put birth announcements to have family known as mama didn't do it. The grandparents did it because they were the ones that were in Hawaii. And the way they're acting, they're hiding something. It turns out that McCain was born in the Panama Canal Zone, and under law at that time, he couldn't be president. It's kind of like both Bush and Cheney. Their real residences were in Texas, and under the Constitution, you can't have president, vice president from the same state, but so what? The globalists love to set these precedents. We'll be right back.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are now into hour number two. We did announce and post via Infowars.com the three winners, first, second, and third place of the answer to 1984's 1776 contest. But I want to verbally mention those great folks coming up in about 25 minutes here on air ahead of Joel Skousen joining us. We originally set up Joel 2 weeks ago, just a few days before the Fukushima reactors began melting down and exploding. And there's new information on that I'll be covering coming up in this hour to cover his third edition of Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places. He's a leading expert in this. I originally had him set up to talk about nuclear fallout and disasters and his deep study of where safe areas are in the U.S., but also internationally. So it's very good timing to have him on now. This was, again, set up more than 2 weeks ago. But we're also, before we get into that, we're going to spend some time on his view of what's happening at Fukushima itself and the situation unfolding in Libya. They're actually intensifying strikes, but Germany's completely pulled out. A lot of other NATO members are saying they don't have a clear roadmap of exactly what they're going to be doing in the future. In fact, let me just go ahead and start covering some of that Libya news right now, and then I'm going to open the phones up in the next segment for your specific quick comments or questions. 1-800-259-9231, completely wide open phones. 800-259-9231 will get you up and on the air. But White House says, again, Libya fight is not a war. It's a kinetic military action. Can't get any more Orwellian. Reuters has a fake poll out where it didn't even let people clearly say they're for or against the war, just what they thought the handling of the war was going from Obama. And so they're putting out the view that 60% back the Libyan military action. Also, analysts report that Libyan mission is clouded by confusion, but the White House put out a statement saying, no, it's clarity. So it must be true. Thousands shout for freedom in southern Syria, with reports that as many as 37 Syrian protesters have been killed. Hospital says, I have no doubt that that could have happened. That family's been ruling that place for decades with an iron fist. The problem is they lied so much about Gaddafi and strafing innocent crowds. Turned out that wasn't true. He didn't run to Venezuela. He didn't run to Zimbabwe. And so with the history of lying, who knows what the truth is. But the main hospital in the southern Syrian city of Dera has received the bodies of at least 37 protesters who were killed in a confrontation with security forces, a hospital official said Thursday. The Syrians said that the government said that it was an armed group of gangs basically working for a foreign power to destabilize the country and showed piles of cash, hand grenades, and machine guns. Who knows what the truth is? I know this. You try to protest in America and they don't give you the, quote, permit, they will attack you. And if you physically resist, the police will kill you. Will the UN invade us over that? Violates the UN charter to involve yourself in the inner activities of a sovereign country because it's recognized the UN could then become the tyranny it was designed to be. Continuing out of Ynet News, out of Israel, Egypt Air removes Israel from the map. Jordan
stretches to the sea, an online map of Egypt's latest airline. Though it continues to fly to Egypt, Egypt Air, the largest airline in Egypt, has removed Israel from the map literally on its website, YNET has learned. Jordan has reached the Mediterranean Sea. The airline subsidiary, Air Sinai, flies to Israel regularly, but customers seek flights to Ben-Gurion National Airport have had a hard time finding them. On the map are the names of Middle East capitals, Amman, Beirut, Damascus, but Israel is nowhere to be found. The omission is especially odd, seeing as the company continues to fly to Israel four times a week. Is it a mistake or a message of things changing inside Egypt?
Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Recapping, a 6.8 earthquake hit Myanmar near the China and Thailand borders today. Some damage to buildings and one death have been reported so far. The earthquake was downgraded initially from a 7.0 to a 6.8 magnitude quake. We have Joel Skousen joining us to give us his expert political science take on North Africa, on the spreading demonstrations all over the Middle East. Now, again, when allies of the globalists, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and others have protest and the government's machine gun the crowds with lead bullets, that is patriotism, that is good, that is human rights. When they fired rubber bullets and beat people with billy clubs and ran over them with horses in Brazil a few days ago, you know, Obama cut short his South American trip. He was just totally protested everywhere. National News, AP did report Obama, Infowars.com, V for Victory posters up in multiple nations. So the folks know what's happening down there. Info Warriors down in Chile, of course, confronting David Rockefeller. Leave Chile! Leave Chile now, Rockefeller! Okay? Okay? Leave Chile now! You kill a lot of people! You're killing a lot of people! I love it how he got in that guy's face. So the Info Warriors are definitely down there. They're definitely down there exposing the globalists, and we want to salute all of them. I was just given a new Matt Ryan article. Apple rejects iPhone 4 radiation metering app. They don't want you measuring that radiation. Also, they're reporting that ion beams are coming out of the reactors. Five that have been stabilized is smoking. One, two, four are smoking. Many experts are saying that it could go critical. You could not just have a normal full meltdown spewing incredible Chernobyl radiation out. That's already ongoing. But a nuclear explosion could happen. And I broke that down in the first hour, but more on that coming up as well. But I do want to go to some of your phone calls right now. Jack, Gary, Sean, Al, Elliot. Now, no matter how informative and how awesome your calls are, I've got to limit my comments to what you say, and we got to move on to the next person or we won't get to you. But I want to hear from you right now. Jack in Japan. Jack, what do you have for us, sir?
Well, I'll tell you what, Alex, just as I was waiting on hold to talk to you just now, we had another earthquake here. It is a pretty serious situation. We've had over 748 earthquakes in the last 13 days. And you are correct. The temperature in reactor number one has spiked to 400 degrees Celsius, and the design specs limit that particular reactor to 302. So we're looking at a pretty serious situation.
400 degrees Celsius, what does that calculate out to in Fahrenheit?
Well, I'm not sure what it calculates out to the Fahrenheit, but I'll tell you what, these numbers are as of 2 p.m. yesterday, and I do know that it has come down about 10 degrees Celsius since then, and so we're roughly looking at something being about 200 degrees Fahrenheit above the design specs.
Well, according to the nuclear physicist we've interviewed, that's hot enough to purify out the uranium, and then if it continues to melt down and the heavier particles concentrate, that can then cause not just fission, but it can actually cause a nuclear explosion.
Well, exactly. And also with the smoke at reactor number three with the plutonium MOX reactor is definitely bad news. Whether or not they have electricity, they've used seawater in there. So now when the seawater evaporates, all the pumps are all encrusted in salt. So even if they get the electricity back up and running, the pumps may not work.
And we have done the calculation. 400 Celsius is 752 Fahrenheit. So that is mighty hot. And again, enough to make those rods fully melt and begin to purify and begin to sediment out. And then as that uranium bunches up together, it could be very, very nasty. Now, a lot of the physics websites are reporting this. A lot of experts are warning. Some of the leading radiation chain reaction specialists like Dr. Busby, who we're working on getting back on tomorrow, have said that that could trigger some type of atomic reaction. Is the Japanese news talking about that?
No, they're not talking about it at all. And it's absolutely stupefying. I mean, some of the Japanese people, some of them are very, very awake, but some of them are not awake, and they're just believing the news and going on with it. I've got a friend who's got a pregnant wife in the prefecture of Tochigi, and the level of radioactive iodine 131 in the water is something on the order of 10 times normal levels, or 10 times safe levels, 10 times legal levels. And he's just, you know, watching the news and reading the newspaper, and I sent him a message, and he called me back, and he's like, oh, I think it's probably okay to drink. And I had to say, guy, you know, it is not.
Well, wait a minute. The Japanese government has told children and pregnant women not to drink it because it attacks fast-growing cells a lot more. I mean, so even though they're telling him not to drink it, he's having his wife drink it.
No, that's in the that's in Tokyo. This friend of mine is in Tochigi. They are telling people in Tokyo to stop drinking it, but it's not getting out to the other prefectures. One other thing, Alex, that I really wanted to comment on, and I'm not seeing any sort of reporting on it in the mainstream media, is that we are experiencing full-on gasoline shock here. Very few gas stations at all have gas, and as a result, the trucking industry has been crippled, and we're now seeing empty shelves at the supermarkets, and people can't go to work.
Yes, I have seen reports of the empty store shelves and a lot of people starting to get hungry. And where's our military in there helping them? No, they've pulled back and are asking people to evacuate U.S. citizens. 2 days ago, they reported in CNN they may make it mandatory. So just outrageous. Jack, anything else from Japan?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was what I wanted to point out, is that now that we've got this, this iodine in the water, the cesium in the water and whatnot, then we get this gasoline shock. And so if you are going to plan, and believe me, Alex, what do you think your chances of getting any sort of, drinkable water at the supermarket are right about now? Your chances are slim to none.
No, they reported yesterday it's totally sold out.
Oh, yeah. And so what I really wanted to say today was just people go out there and get your storable food and water, because when you don't need it, it's cheap and easy to get. And
well, we're mailing potassium iodine. We're getting together today a story of local charities and things to send, potassium iodide from listeners, not just what we're sending, money, food. That's what we've been told is really helpful. But you're saying that transportation's breaking down and that might not even get there?
Well, I don't know about what's happening with the post office. I mean, they may have special access to gasoline, but in terms of just the regular people, I drove by a gas station where they were selling gas for just $20 to a person, and there were lines for kilometers in every direction just to get to that one gas station.
You need to get a photo of that and write a blurb. We'll get it up on Infowars.com. I have seen some of those reports, but none of the images. Thank you so much, Jack, from Japan. Thank you. Jack's been calling us since the disaster began. We'll pray for you, Jack. Gary in California, you're on the air.
Yeah, Alex, Gary here. I was kind of wondering a little bit about the confusion regarding the continued fall of these Middle Eastern countries. Because I've been following your friend Lindsay Williams, and this pretty much falls in line with what your friend Mr. Fromm and others were talking about, the globalist plans to destabilize the Middle East in order to get the oil. But you had another individual on, I'm not sure it was Dr. Begich or one other, and he indicated that there was an oil shortage in some of the areas where Lindsay said there's no oil shortage at all. So I was kind of
wondering. Well, no. That's refined oil versus the crude oil.
Okay. So what, I mean, is the destabilization following the order of what those oil big shots said was going to happen?
5 months ago, in October of last year, almost 6 months ago, Lindsey Williams, what was it, October 22nd, came on air and said they're going to destabilize the Middle East, but then watch China. It's the big one. They're going to push gas prices up massively, and now it's been unfolding. And it's clear that in Libya, in Egypt, and other countries, the West is in there starting this destabilization. Now, the food prices have gone up because of dollar devaluation, so that's the catalyst. So the political dominoes were already lined up right for the globalists to trigger them. But yes, they are engaging in this destabilization program, and our other experts like Webster Tarpley and many others concur, but it's now been confirmed that Western powers, the globalist powers, the New World Order powers that use us as their bully are orchestrating this. I appreciate your call, Gary. Let's go ahead and talk to Sean in California. Go ahead.
Howdy, Alex. I wanted to thank you very much for your anti-war effort. I appreciate that. I just had a quick comment here. I was thinking that I'm sure you're familiar with those Illuminati card game, and a lot of three of the cards point to this disaster pretty specifically. And I'm thinking they're using this disaster to hide a lot of their other shenanigans.
By the way, the guy that came out with those in the mid '90s lives in Austin. He's a big video game developer, and we've made calls. We've sent emails, right, Jaron? Steven Jackson, we've tried to get him on, right? He was out of town last time. I want you to absolutely hammer them with the emails and calls. I know I've talked to folks that know him, that he knows of the show. He put out in the mid-1990s cards that literally show the World Trade Center's being hit in the exact same spot, that describe an understanding of the globalist in this role-playing game to an extremely advanced level. And so much of what's in the cards has happened exactly. And yes, that's a good idea to get him on. We're gonna hammer that. Anything else, Sean?
Yeah, I think they're using this radiation. They're allowing it to get worse so they can hide the radiation from the back scanners at the airports. They're using the radiation, hiding the BP oil disaster affects cancer rates, and they're using it to also hide some of the other shenanigans.
Absolutely. We'll be back.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
I'm going to jam in a few more calls here before Joel Skousen joins us, then we'll continue with calls later on in the interview with him. But we did post these on Infowars.com. The answer to 1984-1776 winners announced is the headline. Edgardo Sanchez is the third place winner, $1,000. The answer to 1984 is 1776. His video entry is an excellent example of peaceful activism and also shows how much one person can do alone in the fight against tyranny. I mean, this guy is incredible. And the name of the video is The Answer to 1984 is 1776. It really deserves to be sent out to everybody you know. Continuing, second place is Rob Foster. The animation piece is excellent, good enough to air on national TV. A Day in the Park. A Day in the Park is an animated short depicting a everyday American citizen experiencing firsthand his loss of liberties at the hands of the police state. Creator Rob Foster's words. The film was made to help counter government media propaganda assaulting the American people on all levels. It is designed to keep the web free and resist Big Brother and Big Sis. It is a delivery vehicle for the message of liberty. And also Phil Lobo Cruz, has got first place with his team for God Rewards the Fearless. And that, again, is posted at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, or just go to YouTube and search God Rewards the Fearless. So the second place winner gets $2,000. The third place winner gets $1,000. And the first place winner gets $7,000. Phil Cruz and his team gets first place for God Rewards the Fearless. Second place, Rob Foster, A Day in the Park, $2,000. Third place, and Mr. Sanchez, $1,000 for the answer to 1984 is 1776. The first place is just an amazing action sequence. It's about 6.5 minutes long, and it shows a near future reality of the militarized police just basically going around and rounding up different political dissenters to take them to FEMA camps. And this military veteran who's now learned that he's on the watch list gets picked up by a face scanning camera and takes him on. And this is what we're trying to avert. But it was very well done, and it's the start of a whole series dealing with the New World Order that they're going to be releasing, and you can follow that on their YouTube channel. So we'll be sending those checks out early next week to everybody. Phil, is, who basically oversaw the contest, did a great job, by the way, is on top of getting you those checks. And I would also – I know these are posted on YouTube, and I'm sure it's okay with the with the contest entry people, but go ahead and email them and make sure it's good for us to clone all of their videos at the Alex Jones channel because it has 95 million views on it and hundreds of thousands of subscribers. And so that'll be a whole nother audience that wasn't aware of these that are subscribers that will be able to see it. So instead of, you know, these videos getting 20, 30,000 views, they'll get hundreds of thousands of views. So, I mean, it's a contest, and in the rules, we're allowed to post it, but I want to go ahead and make sure that's okay with them and get a written email back from all those guys, and we'll post it on the Alex Jones channel so it's easier to find for people. But congratulations. All of you that entered the contest won. Over 1,500 videos were turned into us. Normally, in other contests, we've had 200, 300, 400, and that is a huge job to watch them all. The quality of so many of them was off the charts. It was very hard to pick the winners. And it didn't come down to a coin toss, but it almost did. Once I picked the 10 that I really thought were the best, I separately didn't even tell Phil what I liked best, and he basically agreed on the top 10. Then I showed the top three that I thought were the best, along with some other videos mixed in, and almost everybody, in fact, everybody did unanimously agree, separately from even knowing our choice, that this is what they liked. It's like I'm building a new website, and I showed 19 people here in the office the site compared to several others, and they all basically chose the site we're working on. You know, that's kind of how I do it. It's what I like, but then I like to bounce stuff off of people. And when you get unanimous stuff, you know you picked the right winners. And I'm sorry for the others that didn't win, but resistance is victory. The $10,000 in prize money is just sweetening the deal and, you know, putting a prize there so that the best get recognized for their efforts. But the answer is resistance and getting involved and taking action. And all of you did a great thing. You know, I decided to do this when Big Sis announced a national contest for videos to air in public places about hating your neighbors and not trusting anyone. And I said, let's crush them. Let's counter them. And we've done that. We have struck a great blow against the globalists with 1,500 plus videos that will float around the web forever now. Great job.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, we are here live. Back Sundays, 4 to 6 p.m. And a few days before the Fukushima disaster 13 days ago, we set up Joel Skousen, one of the leading experts in the world on disaster preparedness. He's got his third edition out, Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places. He also has an international guide to safe places. He advises many of the elite of the planet. Most of the former CIA people, State Department folks, are building bunkers. That is actually even in CNN today. Funny that this is actually in the news, actually yesterday. March 23rd, sales of Lux Doomsday Bunkers up 1,000%. And that's been going on for about 5 years. So we're going to talk to him about that. But also geopolitically, first, in this half hour we've got left, the whole next hour will be about strategic relocation, because I get so many questions from callers over and over again over the years about this. And this is Joel's real forte. He's been wanting to come on for years on this subject, and I always just want to get him on to pick his brain about other geopolitical issues. Obviously, his uncle, Cleon Skousen, wrote the first preeminent book, and several subsequent that Glenn Beck and others have said are their Bible in awakening to the New World Order, the different power blocks, how they want a socialist communist system for the elite. And so he follows in that great tradition. He's also a former fighter pilot, U.S. military. We're going to be going to him in just a moment. Also, I want to remind listeners, we get so busy now in the last 2 weeks since this disaster that I hardly even talk about our sponsors or how we fund ourselves. We're not funded by the globalist. We're not funded by the Fortune 500. We are funded by you supporting our little sponsors and buying the books, the videos, the t-shirts, the materials that get the word out at Infowars.com. And if you believe in what we're doing, literally at the tip of the spear here, all of us working together, please spread the word about the broadcast. Whether you're listening on local AM or FM stations or Global Shortwave or XM, please spread the word about the free podcast, the free iPhone app. Please buy the books, the t-shirts, the videos that are all massively discounted, the citizen rule books that we sell at near cost, the bumper stickers, the Patriot wristbands. You'll also meet like-minded people, watch the videos, read the books, like the new book that's now shipping, Big Brother, The Orwellian Nightmare Come True by Mark Dice. We're the exclusive distributor of this for the next 3 months, and then it goes out everywhere. I helped, it was Mark's idea with the printing cost of these. So again, available at Infowars.com. That's how you support us. Also available, and they're almost out until he goes to the next printing. So, and that's on record that Joel Skousen's almost out of these. We bought, from memory, 500 of these. Joel can correct me if I'm wrong. They're going fast, and when they're gone until the next printing gets done. Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, 3rd edition by Joel M. Skousen with Andrew Skousen, available at Infowars.com or by calling toll-free 888-253-3139, 888-253-3139. We'll also hold back some for mail orders. If you want to get that in the mail, it's P.O. Box 19549, Austin, Texas, 78760. Kind of like I held back 500 doses of potassium iodate that can, it has the dose for 20 adults for 10 days. And we held back some of those. We're shipping some to Japan. We may have a limited number, again, that we're going to put on the shopping cart today or tomorrow, and then it's gone. U.S. supply is exhausted. So, again, all available at Infowars.com. And you can also support us by having a PrisonPlanet.tv membership. All of my films, expanded extras, exclusive interviews with people like Joel Skousen, Ron Paul, Charlotte Iserby, the list goes on and on, Webster Tarpley. More and more, every week we're adding exclusive interviews where I fly my teams all over the country and interview these people in in-depth, uninterrupted interviews, all at PrisonPlanet.tv, the higher quality commercial-free podcast, PrisonPlanet.tv. But I got to refill our fuel gas tanks in the InfoWar, and I need people to financially support us. We couldn't have done any of this without you. Plus, we offer powerful services that will wake you up, that will give you the information you need. Because my job's easy. I do deep research. I talk to the best researchers who have the track record of being right. I integrate that information here in a public college, in a public debate, where we all go to a higher level of understanding, integrating with the audience and all of your key intel. No matter where there's a disaster or a crisis, we've got people on the ground, our Patriot listeners. Look at the calls we've had from Japan, sometimes breaking news days before it comes out in the mainstream media, because we've got people globally, millions a day, over a million a day listening on the internet to the streams and the podcast, over a million. Over 2.5 million listening on AM and FM, close to 500,000 tuning in via XM. Unknown hundreds of thousands on global shortwave WWCR. We are trying to challenge the globalist, and we've shown we can have victory. Imagine where we can go next together. And this paradigm shift of understanding of the globalist playbook is now spreading to others. 10 years ago, there were very few people who were prominent that really got the full spectrum analysis. Now I'm seeing more and more good information. Over the last decade, people silted out a lot of the propaganda and garbage and disinfo that's out there, and people are getting more astute. The awakening is accelerating. Now, for the next hour and 21 minutes, we have Joel Skousen as our guest, editor of World Affairs Brief. And we've got a lot of key points to cover with him. But before we go there, I want to get your take on the North Africa situation, the Middle East unrest, what's behind that. Now the West admits they've been stirring it up in Syria, Libya, many other areas. Not that we're fans of these dictators, but the point is, from my intel, this is staged, and it's pretty much admitted now. Al-Qaeda is admitted in BBC, CNN, London Telegraph to be funded by the West in the east of Libya. Incredible. They're now saying it isn't a war. It's a kinetic military operation. So the Orwellian stuff is really spreading. And then I want to get into Fukushima and your view on how serious this cover-up is. And the whole next hour, Mr. Skousen, will be you with the floor with a PowerPoint presentation as you speak for PrisonPlanet.tv viewers. The listeners can later see it uploaded to the web, regular listeners, as you go through strategic relocation and your deep research. But great to have you with us. On that first point, though, do you agree that the understanding of the true global paradigm is accelerating? We now have a expanding remnant who can go out and educate others.
Oh, absolutely. There's a tremendous wave of increased understanding, and a lot of it, in fact, I would say that most of it is due to your efforts on Infowars.com and this program. Coast to Coast is also coming around. I was interviewed just a few days ago with George Norrie, and he said, you know, I used to be really skeptical, Joel, about what you'd said about a future threat of the New World Order and an attack from Russia and China and other things. But boy, he says, I just find your arguments are impressive, and I just got an overwhelming response also from listeners saying, you know, thank goodness, you know, somebody's finally coming around to this stuff. So, yes, we're on a wave, and believe me, it's going to mean there's going to be a larger counterattack from the establishment. They're not going to take this lying down. They're attacking you now, as you know. They're going to be attacking Glenn Beck more. Even George Norrie could be attacked. But anyway, this is an exciting time to be in.
It certainly is. Do you want to go through your view on the unfolding Fukushima situation first?
Right, let me start with Libya, if I can.
Go ahead.
This is an incredible, it's a usual pattern, but it's an incredible pattern of U.S. globalist leaders, whether Republican or Democrat, using humanitarian intervention in Libya as a pretext for an all-out war that was pre-planned even before the non-spontaneous revolt by opposition leaders. You know, as you and I both know, there really isn't, at the highest levels, an al-Qaeda that is a terrorist organization against the West. This is a black operation. This has been funded by U.S. Special Services and the dark side of American government and British intelligence for many, many years. That doesn't mean that they don't have real terrorists that they use, but when they give them orders, they don't know that those orders really are to provoke this kind of terrorism, this kind of revolt, in order to give the globalists an excuse to intervene. And that's exactly what we're seeing. Muammar Gaddafi's air defense sites and air bases have all been destroyed by cruise missiles in the first day, and now the U.S. and its allies are having trouble finding excuses to continue the attack under the same pretexts. That's why they're continuing to morph and move and reinterpret the U.N. resolution, which, if you read the language, as I'm sure you've covered, doesn't really limit it at all to a no-fly zone. And they've quickly moved beyond that. Anything that moves on the ground militarily is now a new and eager target. But air attacks alone aren't going to remove Gaddafi, who's determined to turn this into a long and protracted conflict. At some point, the U.S. is going to have to justify an invasion, either directly or by surrogates, and that won't be easy to do given the mounting opposition to this trumped-up and unconstitutional war. You know, Alex, I have never seen before as much news coverage about the unconstitutional nature of this war. You know, one of the biggest finds out there was the a clip from 2007 of Vice President Joe Biden going head-to-head with Chris Matthews, and he's saying, do you still stand by your position, the president, that this is an impeachable offense? You know, go to war without constitutional backing of Congress? And he went on and said, yes, this is absolutely an impeachable offense, and the president has no authority whatsoever to go to war under these conditions. And yet Biden is silent about Obama doing that. Here's the very vice president silent about doing the same thing.
Well, Joel, let me stop you because that's where I was going next with you. This is really two-part. The media is covering the fact that Biden said if Bush, without getting congressional approval, attacks Iran, I will move to impeach him. I'm a constitutional lawyer, he went on to say. Here's the facts. Now, at least Bush, with Iraq and other things that I didn't support and was unconstitutional, he at least got an open-ended resolution from the Congress, not a constitutional declaration of war. But now Obama, last Thursday at night, the UN resolution for force, for the no-fly, for the bombardment, they come out and say you will now leave or else you will accept a humanitarian force on the ground, or we will attack you. And in less than 48 hours, the bombardment began. Congress wasn't even consulted. And Congress, except for Ron Paul and a few Democrats, hasn't even complained. And so the media is focusing on the unconstitutional nature via not getting congressional declaration of war. But that's even a side issue. You have the UN for the first time that I've seen, I mean, they've done it to a certain extent before, brazenly, nakedly, openly giving an order and the president instantly jumping to those orders. As Ron Paul said, this is a big step towards global government.
I think you're right in the sense that they're trying to, you know, Henry Hyde, when you remember the quote about him saying that the Constitution is, you know, that's, we don't do that anymore. We don't declare war. He told Ron Paul when he tried to get a declaration of war in a congressional hearing about Iraq. And I think that the major powers that be in government basically said, you know, I think that we've got our congressman under control, that nobody's going to complain about this. And they were wrong. Somebody's brought it up. And there's more than just Ron Paul complaining this time. And in fact, people are bringing it up in the meetings. Jeff Flake in Arizona was confronted, Republican, about, you know, why haven't you complained? Because this isn't a declaration of war, and he hemmed around. In fact, it has come out that the White House gave a secret briefing to a select group of congressmen, letting them know that they were going to attack Iraq, but they didn't bother to say, we're consulting, we want your permission. They just gave them a secret briefing. And they each, to a T, walked out of the briefing saying, oh, aren't I great, because I was part of the secret meeting, and now they're embarrassed because they, in fact, did know and didn't raise the warning.
Well, that's how these globalists operate. It's like the 10-member continuity of government governor council that Obama has set up, where they can say, well, the states don't have standing now under the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, FEMA and Homeland Security is in control because we have a ceremonial, vestigial, hand-picked group of governors who speak for the other 40. And if Congress doesn't say no to this now, this will set under administrative law, that's how the globalists think, this precedent, where they just brief a few congressmen in secret that now the UN is the complete boss of America.
Well, obviously, of course, there's nothing legal that makes that in force, and the people can start to rebel, and that's our purpose, Alex, is to build up a rebellion and demand that congressmen stop this and bring this issue to the fore again about a declaration of war. You know, I'm covering in tomorrow's World Affairs Brief, there's several indications this was planned well in advance. As you may have known, NATO General Wesley Clark inferred in an interview this week that the bombing of Libya had been on the drawing board of the Pentagon for several years. In the Financial Times, one of the Western sources at the 28-minister meeting in NATO on Wednesday admitted to him, what did he say? He said, NATO countries have been working for weeks to have the alliance assume effective command of the mission. Well, the mission hasn't even started. It's less than a week old, and he says, plural, they've been working for weeks to about this assumption of command given, and that means this was pre-planned. Of course, you covered on Infowars.com the Gates' supposedly sarcastic quote when Petraeus asked him if offhandedly if they're going to invade Libya, and he said, yeah, exactly, and yet prior to his visit to Cairo, you know, Robert Gates had said that no one was in a position to predict what would happen in Libya. He's getting less and less credible now. He seems to be
Well, they don't know how shotgun mics work from reporters 30 feet away. He gets off the plane, and Petraeus says, wow, you're in a really big plane today. Not, not the, normal, smaller private or government jet. And he says, what are you getting ready to bomb Libya? And he goes, yeah, exactly. And they start laughing. And again, that was weeks before this even began.
Yeah, absolutely. But in any case, it's very interesting, you know, that the as the U.S. is desperate for someone to take over this operation because, you know, the Obama administration has embarrassed their core constituency, has been told for years that they will, you know, not do the same kind of intervention around the world that the Bush administration does. And frankly, the left is very upset with the Obama administration. They want cover. I mean, I don't believe for a minute that the U.S. isn't totally in charge of this. They simply want cover. The Europeans are balking at this, even though half a dozen European leaders, including Berlusconi of Italy, Sarkozy of France, and Angela Merkel in Britain are just puppet globalists to the U.S. Nevertheless, they have their own constituency. This war is getting very, very unpopular in Europe, and these people are in trouble, and that's why they haven't been able to reach an agreement. The Germans are starting to pull out their equipment, two frigates and an AWACS airplane. Sarkozy is still in there for the duration, so is Britain. These are reliable lackeys to the globalist cause. But there's a very interesting you know, admission that, in fact, they were going through all this negotiation for weeks, and it was all agreed of how they were going to take over this. And all of a sudden, Sarkozy said, I'm not signing the agreement. And this was on the very day that the attack started, and it came out that French jets were attacking Libya. In other words, he didn't want any agreement. He wanted to walk out of that meeting as the hero to his country that France is leading the way with the first jet strike.
Well, he's now said that. He said he wants a board run by France, not NATO. And that goes back to De Gaulle basically grabbing his nukes and kicking NATO out. Stay there. I want to come back and ask, what's the end game? Why are they doing this now? What's the stratagem? Joel Skousen studying the geopolitical camps. Why are they launching destabilizations all over North Africa and the Middle East? What is the larger plan? Why is this coming now?
I had originally thought, Alex, and I said so in my brief, that it looked as if that they were fomenting Islamist radical revolutionaries such as the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And, you know, there's several other wildfires going on in the Middle East, and that's still ongoing. But I thought originally this was to create chaos in the Middle East with Islamic fundamentalism to give Israel an excuse to lash out at Iran, blaming Iran for this, and that they would basically end up in a Middle East larger war. But I now feel that there's another agenda here. I think, and this has to do with the aspect of piracy in Somalia. You know, it's always been known that they could have shut down those pirates. They could have gone in there at any time and invaded those ports, rooted them out in a week, and all the world would have cheered, and they've done nothing except play footsie with those large pirate bases there in Somalia. I'm now thinking that, in fact, because the Muslim Brotherhood has gone away now in Egypt, and the military is fully in control, and we have a military invasion getting ready to happen in Libya, that the globalists are going to start a march down Africa to clean out all of the, you know, justification. This is the justification to clean out all of the unstable countries down and bring peace and moderation and democracy to Africa. I think they're headed for
Sudan?
The Sudan, just south. That's a very unstable country. And then right into Somalia. And I think that we're going to see a justification for a larger African presence that will build up this image of the U.S. romping through the world as the bully of the world.
So this is the rollout of AFRICOM, and we're seeing statements from AFRICOM that's exactly what's happening and that the U.S. operations are being commanded out of AFRICOM.
It is. It's the U.S. African Command that is running this, and they wouldn't have done that. They would have normally used the Middle Eastern Command, but Petraeus, you know, essentially has been out of the block here. So this has been planned prior, probably, as Wesley Clark says, up to 3 or 4 years prior, that there was going to be a big African operation. And I think they used the fundamentalist Muslims to get it started, but I think we're going into a wartime. I think they're going to do to Africa what they've done to the Middle East.
What about false flag? We're also seeing statements in the New York Times that, oh my gosh, Gaddafi may launch terror attacks now as a way to strike back. Could the globalists stage some attacks to legitimize the wider invasion?
That's very, very likely. They're going to, listen, this has got all the marks that we won't take no for an answer. They're going to root him out, and it's not going to be easy to root him out, but as I pointed out, pointing out in tomorrow's brief, Libya does not have the kind of terrain that lends itself to a long guerrilla war like Afghanistan. So Gaddafi's going to have to stay hunkered down with his Russian weapons and his significant ground forces, his underground bunker systems. U.S. is going to have to justify an invasion to go and root him out, and I think they're going to have to stage some atrocities to justify this, because right now they're having trouble justifying a lot of the attacks going on in Tripoli, and there are civilian casualties. Hospitals are filling up. So much for the humanitarian perspective. I mean, let's face it, if the U.S. was really worried about humanitarian effect, they'd have invaded Zimbabwe years ago. We have hundreds of thousands of people under attack. They would have invaded North Korea under humanitarian reasons, but that's just a pretext.
Well, we also see the Marines being sent in, the amphibious landing craft. We're seeing that resolution and Hillary's statements about you will accept a humanitarian ground force or else. This has all the makings of a ground invasion.
Great.
All right, let's finish up on where you see that going, the time frame, then we'll shift gears into Fukushima, and that leads us directly into strategic relocation, your PowerPoint presentation.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
I originally, more than 2 weeks ago, set up Joel Skousen to do an hour and a half presentation on strategic relocation. We're going to get into that coming up in the next segment, and the segue will be his take on the disaster at Fukushima that's still unfolding. And the clear cover-up there, we just don't know how intense that cover-up is. But the Japanese still admit they're not releasing real radiation levels. They are confirming 1,600 times safe levels up to 20 kilometers away. But finishing up in the few minutes we've got in this short segment, Joel, with Libya, if Obama and NATO and the UN are openly setting up invasion ships, Marine Corps ships, 2,200 more Marines flown in to be put on board those ships, Hillary and others have said, you will accept a humanitarian force on the ground. And they're now saying this isn't a war, though. This is kinetic military action that we're going to continue to attack you. So it's set up to be an occupation. But Obama comes out and says absolutely no occupation. How are they going to shift out of that line? So I see a staged terror attack or a foiled event, and then they can continue to claim al-Qaeda in North Africa and in the east of Africa is the pretext, and then AFRICOM, who's already making statements about this, as you said, can roll in to one country after the next. But how do they do that without the staged terror attack?
Well, I think you're probably right. They've always used staged terror attacks, and they're not beyond using that here. It will be blamed on al-Qaeda. You know, it's very interesting that Gaddafi tried to use the al-Qaeda card by saying that it was al-Qaeda in these other cities, not real opposition. And nobody even gave him the time of day. But when the U.S. says it's al-Qaeda, everyone believes that it's the American people are pretty unable to distinguish between this. And this is because I think the media is just in lockstep with these types of things. There just isn't any real opposition out there except in the alternative media. But I think we're going to see an invasion, as you say, because the National Guard has been put on alert. There's going to be certain units taken in there. And I think that's because they want to relieve frontline special forces that will go in as a spearhead and give the appearance of normal soldiers doing they won't call it occupation, but peacekeeping mission. Once again, it'll be a UN peacekeeping mission. But I think that there'll be other provocations. We'll probably see another pirate attack that'll justify them going down in. They'll blame the Sudan for something involved here. But I think we haven't seen the end of this long road march down through Africa. And they may well finally, after all these years, take out Zimbabwe too. Because if they get near that region, it certainly is a provocation
And that's the model, and these weak third world dictatorships are sitting ducks. This has always been the UN model of humanitarian takeovers when they go in and slaughter people and put in a new gaggle of dictators or plutocrats. I mean, this is the model of the New World Order invading countries by putting a humanitarian mask on it.
And it explains what my uncle for years pointed out of why are the globalists that are putting in communists into China, communists into Cuba, into Nicaragua, why are the who aren't communists protecting these people in the State Department that are managing these operations? And I've long then figured out it must have been because they want to create world chaos and they come in and rescue people. Humanitarian occupations in the name of the United Nations and the New World Order, and that's exactly what we're seeing.
Well, that's the great game. That's the British model of destabilizing. Don't let anybody get organized. Don't let anybody have a civilization. Keep it in chaos so that a tiny elite with limited military force who is organized can dominate. Do you concur with that statement, Joel?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, we're going to go to break, and we're going to come back and get into Fukushima. I haven't asked your opinion on this. I don't know it yet, but I'm going to get your view on it, recap some of the news there, and then segue into Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, 3rd edition. He also has reports on foreign safe relocations, countries and areas he thinks, from his deep research, are safe. We'll be right back with Joel Skousen. I'm Alex Jones. Get the book at InfoWars.com.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Joel Skousen is our guest for the rest of the hour. He's the editor of World Affairs Brief, worldaffairsbrief.com. I'm Alex Jones, of course, with InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, and PrisonPlanet.tv. We're done talking about Libya and this big globalist takeover of Africa that they've kicked off with the hypocritical cover story of humanitarianism. Next, we move to Joel Skousen's view and perspective on Fukushima. Now, even the fifth reactor that had been successfully shut down even before the earthquake and subsequent tsunami is now smoking. Going back 12 days ago, only a day into this, we're now into day 13. The Japanese admitted partial meltdown. I've had many physicists on, experts in radiation releases. They say that if you're having ion beams shooting out of multiple reactors, that means that fission is going on. If the MOX reactor number 3 that has weapons-grade plutonium in it, 7%, 93% uranium, continues to melt down, and some of these reactors are over 750 degrees Fahrenheit, 400 degrees Celsius, it will purify the plutonium out in one level, the uranium in another, and then other lighter fissile materials on top. If there is any type of explosion, that's how a nuclear weapon uses, they have shaped charges, plastic explosives, around the uranium or plutonium and the different variants of weapons. They also have systems where they fire a plutonium bullet into uranium. There's a lot of different systems, but the point is the Russians, what, in 53, had one of their reactor storage facilities blow up in a nuclear explosion, and we've covered that with physicists and historians in the last 13 days, that there is a real danger, not just of Chernobyl events where it spews even more into the air and it comes across the Pacific to the North America, but an actual nuclear explosion. Do you concur with that analysis, Joel Skousen, from your deep research into nuclear threat, nuclear war? And because, I mean, that this is your main forte. That's why, of course, you've written the book, Strategic Relocation, that we're going to start a PowerPoint on as you direct us here via telephone. We'll have that up for PrisonPlanet.tv viewers. But as radio listeners follow along, they should get the book, Strategic Relocation, a huge coffee table book with, you know, the color photos and diagrams and maps. It's just amazing. Again, available at InfoWars.com. But your view on Fukushima and where this is going.
Well, I agree with all of that assessment except the last one. I don't believe, very strongly don't believe, that it could actually turn into a nuclear explosion. It at best would be a dirty explosion based on hydrogen, but even that is unlikely. I'm not giving a Pollyanna scenario here. In fact, we've dodged a bullet because there have not been any high-altitude funeral pyre type fires like we had at Chernobyl, which essentially didn't have a containment chamber around it.
Sure. Let me stop you, though. Bob Bowman was on here a week and a half ago, 3 degrees in nuclear physics, and he said he didn't think anything would happen at 5 and 6 because they'd already been shut down before the disaster, and now 5 is smoking and having big problems. So it's not possible, as some physicists have said, that there could be an explosion?
Absolutely not possible to have a nuclear explosion, only a dirty explosion with hydrogen, but not a nuclear explosion. I repeat, that is not true.
Explain that to me, because that's good news.
Because it's extremely difficult to get nuclear particles to explode in a fission-type bomb. It's just very, very difficult. It has to be perfectly done. It has to be perfectly controlled. There's no way, when you have all of the mixing in the melting process of zirconium and other things, that you're going to get the concentrations of purity that allow. And then you have to have, of course, a tritium trigger or something, very powerful injection of nuclear material into the middle of a controlled, contained mass to set off those types of reactions. Not possible.
Okay, so when they talk about explosions then, because they do call it a dirty fission explosion, I mean, they're having some fission going on just with the melting,
yeah.
So maybe that's where I got confused.
But that's fission of a totally different variety. That simply resolves itself in melting. And when you start then melting in top of this is what happened in Chernobyl. You didn't have the containment, the massive amount of steel and concrete around it. So when you start melting the steel of the building and everything, it just turned in. It's just like adding oxygen and flame to a fire. And that's how that stuff got up to 30,000 feet and carried for hundreds and hundreds of miles and even circled the globe. But that's not going to happen here. What we're going to get is a nuclear nightmare into the water around there, because the particles coming out, most of it escaping from these containment chambers, are still being mostly filtered. I think that a lot of those filters have been compromised. So we're getting some nuclear release, but most of it's still being contained inside or coming out in the water release drains coming out of this. I'm also afraid that you are correct, that we're not out of the woods yet, because there are signs this week that their containment, which had leveled off for about 3 or 4 days, is now starting to decrease. The temperatures are rising. The amount of radiation is getting stronger. I think the pools, which they overloaded with spent fuel, are still continuing to heat up. They're not cooled down, even though some cooling water has been restored in 5 and 6. There are signs that this is getting away from them. Now, I still don't believe it would be a Chernobyl-type event, but it could be a lot worse. And I think the greatest danger that we're facing is this stuff falling into the ocean, getting into the fish and the seafood, and this going up into Alaska and affecting all of the seafood that comes out of our northern waters.
What's your concern with the 640,000 spent fuel rods they were storing, many of them on top of reactors that have had the big hydrogen explosions? They're admitting that a lot of that did blow into the ocean. They are picking up all sorts of radiation in the food and water, according to the Tokyo News and the Kyoto News, 1,600 times safe levels.
Yeah, they should never have put that many spent fuel rods in that position. That's one of the major mistakes of that design by GE, is to have used that space above the reactors to store those spent fuel rods. And there is a tremendous amount of radioactive material in there. If that stuff starts to boil away, and that's what I'm really worried about, because I think the reactors will contain most of the molten meltdown of those others, except for what gets into the seawater, but not the fuel rods on top. That's what's really in danger.
So, studying this for decades, how do you see it unfolding then?
I still feel that this is going to be a, at worst, a deadly potential problem for Japan and for the ocean sea life. I repeat, I do not believe we're going to get any significant amounts of radiation in the air, because it just hasn't got high enough into the altitude to get there. And in fact, I'm monitoring every single day the numerous, we got 20 or 30 radiation detectors all along the West Coast, and they have not shown one blip upwards yet. So there is.
What about the federal government saying they've seen increases in radiation, but that it's not very high?
Not here. That was in the air around Japan. There is no detector, and I'm watching all of them, Alex. There's no detector that's shown any increase whatsoever in radiation carried by the air here. But we're going to have to watch the waters because that current, the Japanese current, comes up to Alaska and down the West Coast. And that could be the real hidden danger because whether it's swimming or whether it's fish or anything that comes out of that ocean.
Well, here's an example. You know, you go to the Texas coast and coconuts from thousands of miles away wash up or message in a bottle. And I have looked at those currents. They go up and around Alaska, down the coast. Other currents come up. And if you've got seaweed or plants or fish, we know that stuff goes all over the ocean. And the type of half-life we're talking about with plutonium and uranium, what happens then?
Well, first of all, I think the plutonium part will be kept within the reactor vessel. That's one upgrade from the other reactor vessels. Even though if there's a partial meltdown, I think it's going to be contained. So I don't think we have to worry about plutonium. And the half-life of the other ones are sufficient, like iodine is about 8 days. And so a lot of that is going to be deactivated by the time it floats up the current. But nevertheless, the fish, that eat that stuff, we're going to still see some higher levels in Japanese. I wouldn't be buying any sushi in the future. And I'd be careful that we monitor the Pacific salmon, which is our richest crop coming out of Alaska, actually about 3/4 of all of our best fish in the West Coast comes from Alaskan waters. And we've got to watch that.
Well, I respect your views, and I hope you're right on all of this, but it's a dire situation, but a little less worse in my mind after talking to you. Let's shift gears, though. Why have you been focused for so long on the nuclear threat, on strategic relocation? Was it because you noticed elites getting prepared a long time ago? We're about to go to break, but give us a synopsis ahead of going into more detail on strategic relocation.
Well, my concern, of course, is strategic relocation is the major threat to all of us is population density. I mean, look at what's happened. I can still get the products that I eat out here in areas which don't have high population densities, but anybody trying to get potassium iodide or radiation detectors or anything in the survival preparedness community, even food in a major metropolis like the Los Angeles area, or even Austin, Texas, where you are, is just out of luck. Massive density of people is your biggest threat because in any crisis, it simply strips the supply clean within a day and you're stuck. So many people panicking. I just want to mention, too, even though you should be trying to get potassium iodide stockpiled, don't be taking it now.
Absolutely.
You're wasting it. In other words, save it for a time when there actually is radiation in the air. And as I tried to tell in my World Affairs brief a couple of weeks ago, remember, just keep it from getting ingested into your lungs. Wear a mask. Have a respirator. It doesn't even have to be a gas mask. Just one of these paint respirators that's $30 from Home Depot is sufficient to stop any of that to getting into your lungs. Don't make sure you use filtered water. Get a big Berkey and make sure that you don't ingest it. And then it's not as dangerous and not a problem.
But the bottom line is you get 37 million people in Tokyo, 30-plus million Mexico City, 10 million Los Angeles metro, 14 million New York metro. All of this going on, human populations themselves are a bomb a few weeks after one of these disasters because even in Japan, they're very well behaved and ordered. They're running out of food. They're running out of water. People are starting to get angry. And so let's talk about the real threats, what we're facing, strategic relocation. Your presentation begins. And I'm going to give you the floor pretty much on the other side. Short segment coming up, then an 18-minute segment. We'll go a little bit into overdrive today with Joel Skousen to have time to finish this.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, this is something a little experimental for radio and TV. We're going to do a slideshow presentation PowerPoint. A lot of what's covered in the book, Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, but Joel will be describing it for radio listeners as well. But I do suggest you get this incredible color book with all the maps and diagrams and documents. He's done an incredible research. And then later towards the end of the hour, we'll talk about, in just a general scope, some of the foreign areas in the world from his research of nuclear war threats and other disaster threats, the safest places to live. But the overall driving issue is don't live in a big city. Joel Skousen, this is a short segment, but please begin your presentation. You have the floor.
Well, thanks, Alex. Let's first of all switch from the cover to the main question of what do we mean by strategic relocation. there's all kinds of relocation and guides out there that talk about the best golf courses and the best hospital care and the best retirement homes and recreation and warm, sunny climates. That's why Arizona and Florida grew, like hotcakes over the year. But unlike all these other books, this guide not only teaches you or does not teach you where to buy the best home and the best school districts and, where the best shopping is. Strategic Relocation was specifically written to help people like Alex Jones listeners to make assessments about strategic safety of the places that they live in the long term. That's the most important thing when a person thinks about his life and where he should live, other than the fact that you've got to make a living. You've got to understand where's the best long-term security. There's going to be a playoff between, because most people can't live in the most secure locations. Because in the most secure locations, you very rarely can make a living. And that's one of the reasons why, when people ask me, they call me up all the time, well, tell me where the safe place is. And I tell them, there is no exactly safe place, because most of the time you can't make a living in a safe place. And so there's lots of these things. That's why this is a complex subject. Yeah, I take people through all of these things. And we have these illusions of peace and prosperity, even despite, foreign wars going on to Americans. Most of this is way, way far away. It's not going to touch us. I'm here to say that it's going to touch us someday, and it's going to start touching us now, especially economically. The economic foundations of the U.S. and the world are all based upon fiat money, and they're crumbling. The bailouts and more debt, whether in Europe or the United States, merely postpone the inevitable default. They do not stop it. I'm convinced it cannot be stopped, in fact. Default through collapse or through war is inevitable, in my opinion. Now, I think they'll choose war before collapse and use it as an excuse to start over with the world currency and a new debt cycle. They frankly cannot tax enough to pay the kinds of things they're doing. They must use debt and the commensurate inflation of our money supply, which is the deflation of our buying power. Well, continual intervention in other countries like Libya will invite eventual military backlash from Russia and China. I'm one of the foremost spokesmen of two or three in the country that believe that Russia and China are not allies, that they're not friendly, that they will not be contained by trade, that they, in fact, are and have been attempting or planning to strike the West and will do so at some point. And we seem to be handing them the excuse. But in any major crisis, as I mentioned, as Alex mentioned, your biggest enemy will be high-density concentrations of people, crippled supply lines, and crippled infrastructure. It will guarantee widespread social unrest and panic within a day, and even good people will have no other choice but to go scavenging for food, and that's what makes a defense nightmare when you're looking at good people who come rummaging through your property looking for something, and you simply won't be shooting and defending yourself in that way or in an aggressive way against good people. You've got to simply get out of the mainstream, get out of the maelstrom, either by having concealed spaces, which we talk about in Strategic Relocation, or getting out of town, hopefully, and being positioned so that you can get out before this happens. Don't be on the attempting to make the last train out, as Gary North used to talk about so much. So what's new about this third edition? Well, the third edition is a complete rework of the previous two editions of the book. And not only has updated information for 2010, but entirely revised content layout, almost three-fourths of the text is new. The most significant changes in this edition include a new worldwide analysis of countries around the world, state and province-specific reviews of the U.S. and Canada, and dozens of new maps and tables to make information more accessible, easy to use. In fact, I added 200 new pages with not only an individual analysis of each state and a rating, but a complete color map showing everything about it, which we'll show you some pictures later on in the presentation if you're watching on the Prison Planet TV, of all of the land use within these states and the military targets, et cetera.
All right. Now, we've got just about 30 minutes left on the other side. We'll go a little bit into overdrive, but we're going to come back. You'll have the floor, and we'll launch into the presentation from your deep research. And folks, again, can get the book, Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, third edition, at Infowars.com. He's about to be out of print until he gets more printed. Get yours today. I know I've got mine.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want to stop tyranny?
Well, so does he. Live from the InfoWars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
Okay, we are back live doing a radio/TV simulcast, going through a PowerPoint presentation that breaks down the book, Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, third edition with Joel M. Skousen. Joel, please continue.
Well, there are four major sections to this book. Selecting a Safe Country is the first section. That's a new section where we actually, just by popular demand, people keep calling me, I've got to get out of here because of all the threats to America and I want to go to a safe place. And I'll discuss that in a minute. Section two is analysis of North America. Section three, strategies for security. And North America is Canada, and the United States is what I concentrate on. That's where most of our audience is, and most of my study and work has been in designing safe homes around North America. Number three, section three, strategies for security and relocation. One of the most important sections, what makes this different than anybody else's analysis, is the fact that there is no real safe place for everyone. And every place has some compromise. Every place has some down things, and so there's a tremendous amount of compromise, modification, contingency planning, two or three steps that you've got to do to prepare yourself. And I cover this very interesting subject in that whole section. And then the fourth section is where you have wrap it all together and make your choices of state and regional analysis, where I go through region by region and show the strong points and the weak points of various regions. And hopefully by then a person says, all right, I want this state or this state or this state. And then in that last section, I've got the color maps of every state with all of the targets, all of the land use problems, all of the volcano threats and all the earthquake threats on each individual state where you can actually start to pick where you're going to go. Next slide. Talking about a safe country. First of all, it's important to understand how we view the world. It's very interesting how most people, if you go to any of the traditional expatriate sites, the people who've left the United States and they explore the doctrine of international living. There's this site called internationalliving.com on the website, a website, and they extol all the wonders of living cheap and having access to the beach and all of these wonderful things. And most of the concerns that people have on those websites are, how do I deal with this legal problem? How do I deal with this real estate problem? How do I get American products here? How do I get access to my banking account down here? And all these little mundane things, and I can tell you, Alex, nobody's asking the question is or even thinking that this may change. And yet the one thing that I point out in all of these countries is that stability is not there. Laws change, rules change, the culture change. It gets friendly to Americans, hostile to Americans. You keep maneuvering all of the time. There are also long-term economic threats which will face other countries. Then nobody's talking about war and conflict. Even those that talk to me and say, you know, I want to get out of the United States because if you're right, it's going to be a target of a nuclear war. And I have to ask them, well, you know, if I get you out into one of these other countries, and then they turn against you and turn against Americans or start confiscating your bank account, or the bank account is cut off and you can't get your money anymore. All those things that happened in Argentina and Mexico, et cetera, how do you get back to the United States then? How do you get back if you burned all your bridges and other things? So those are the kinds of things that I talk about there. There's cultural conflict. You know, there's language. There's differences. The fact that you don't look like the rest of people. It's hard to blend in. And we talk a lot in my books and my work and the World Affairs Brief about how important it is in when you've got a powerful secret combination of power running various governments, including our own in the world, and how you've got to learn to not only fight for your liberty, but also be able to hide when you need to take a low profile, to go underground, if you will. The next slide, I talk about political freedom. This is a very interesting map. It's actually very a comparison to economic freedom in the United States. And you'll notice the black, those of you who can see it, the countries in black are places where there's very, very little freedom economically. And this pretty well correlates to political freedom as well. There's one anomaly here in the middle of Africa. You see the Sudan, and it's white, meaning it's almost anarchic. You can do anything you want economically in Sudan, but it does not qualify as political freedom. But generally speaking, there's a great deal to be learned from this map. You want to pick the lighter areas on the map, which show that there's more freedom. And you'll notice that the U.S. and Canada are not the freest countries in the world in terms of lack of regulation. But those that do, like the Sudan, have almost no regulation, are unstable because of anarchical tendencies. So in the next slide, we look at population density in the world boomer picking a country. And it's very dramatic here how all of Eastern Asia and Southern Asia are just black with high-density places of people. And also Europe is very, very highly densely populated. Even the United States, which our eastern coast is the highest population densities, and on the west coast, still doesn't compare with the densities you have in India, Pakistan, and China, and even Europe, where the population densities run up to...
Canada looks pretty good.
Yes, it does. It's just almost free and clear, and that's because almost 90% of Canada lives within 50 miles of the U.S. border. It's almost an extension of the United States. In the next slide, we talk about world seismic hazards. Nothing is more has been brought to the attention of the world more than what happened in Japan, which is on the Ring of Fire. But it's also, if people could see the map, those that can will see that almost the edge of every one of these major continents are major rifts in the Earth's surface, major fault zones.
And that just so happens to be where a lot of the population is.
That's correct. It's correct. The sea has provided the life of a lot of people, lifeblood of many cultures as they start up. But everything along the Pacific, Western Pacific, Japan, all the way down through Australia and New Zealand is part of the Ring of Fire, and it's had major earthquakes in Christchurch and in Japan. But you'll notice how it goes clear up into the Middle East and Central Asia. Central Asia, and they have all this mud and brick and concrete construction. When they have earthquakes in Afghanistan and in other places, Kazakhstan and Central Asia, I mean, they kill thousands and thousands of people because of construction.
And that's why you have the Himalayas, is the Indian subcontinent slamming into Eurasia.
That's exactly right. So we obviously, can't avoid earthquake hazards, and a lot of those things have to be mitigated. I talk about that in my strategy sections because even in the United States, people can see the map. I mean, you have east and west coast, mostly west coast is where the highest hazard is, but even the New Madrid Fault in the middle of the country is a massive fault, and unfortunately, with the clay soils and the water table situation, you will have ripples from the New Madrid Fault that go all the way to the East Coast and all the way into the South. They can travel hundreds of miles in a wave-like action when you have a lot of water mixed with clay soil.
Now, just to interrupt briefly, your map doesn't show a spot for the Yellowstone megavolcano that a lot of scientists say,
it does. You just can't see it probably on your screen.
But I was thinking that would be because it hasn't been recorded in modern history, but more and more scientists are saying that's a pretty dangerous area. Just for volcanic and other seismic activity, probably not good to live around Yellowstone.
Right. I do cover that in the state analysis or in the North American analysis. This is a world map, and so it doesn't show up as clearly, but I do clearly cover it in strategic relocation. Going to be a major problem, not only, as you say, earthquake, but also volcanic threat. And when that one blows its top, it's going to put ash all through the Midwest. So on the next slide, let me just talk about some of these regional countries in terms of picking a country. First of all, forget about, Eastern Asia, the former Soviet republics. It's my opinion that the fall of the Soviet Union was a carefully crafted deception, that Russia fully intends to take those countries back. Forget about Africa. That's the most unstable continent in the world. The Middle East is a tinderbox. There will never be peace until the Second Coming in the Middle East. The only place that really... let me just address, by the way, Australia and New Zealand, because a lot of people are thinking about going to Australia and New Zealand. A lot of them have had second thoughts because of the earthquake in New Zealand. But let me tell you, it is my concerted opinion and analysis that China, when they do strike the West someday in concert with Russia, will take the role that Japan did in World War II, and they'll take the entire Eastern Asia-Pacific region all the way from Japan down and will occupy Australia and New Zealand. So I don't think you want to live under Chinese occupation. the Oriental countries have a complete ruthlessness about human life when it comes to wartime conduct. The Japanese, in the extreme torture, and the Chinese are doing that right now in their Laogai and are very much capable of doing that. So I do not recommend anything long-term in the Pacific region.
Because a lot of elitists are running to New Zealand, the Cook Islands, and other areas in that area of the Pacific.
That's right. In other words, that's a real trap because of the relative peace, and it speaks English and all of those things that people are attracted to New Zealand and Australia. But they really have globalist lackey governments. The Australian government in particular really puts the pressure
on China's buying up most of their infrastructure and their mines right now, really upsetting the Australians. Just a brief interruption here.
No, that's absolutely correct. I point that out, Alex, that most of the mineral rights are being bought up. Australia is in a bad way economically, and they're looking to China as their savior. It's going to be anything but their savior. But I'll tell you, China's buying up Australia so that they will have a vested interest for occupation someday, and you will see that happen.
Please continue.
Yeah. Now, we know now that Mexico is becoming a major unstable state. There are more expatriates in Mexico than any other place in the world. It's a death trap. You can't really travel anymore. People who are down in Ensenada can't go overland anywhere between there and Texas. They're lucky if they can make it up the coast to Tijuana and back to the United States by land. This is becoming a very strong failed state. It's my prediction that eventually things will get bad enough there between the CIA drug run running, which is done in concert with the Mexicans and all of the competitors now, which are causing these drug wars, that it'll give the United States an excuse to intervene militarily and place their vaunted North American compact in place or the security partnership. Going further south, the most popular countries in Latin America are Panama and Costa Rica. Panama probably is a trap also for the future because of the Chinese presence there. The Chinese have a presence there at the Panama Canal, a shipping port presence, as well as military bases. And even though Panama is very, very open to Americans, it is probably the freest of the Latin American countries for allowing you to have direct access to your checking accounts in the United States. It also serves as a banking center internationally for all the people in Ecuador who can't get local banking with American checking there. Almost everyone's using Panamanian banks now, but I don't expect that to continue. This is the case in the Caribbean. There's been a lot of safe havens. They've been compromised now by America, so you have to be very careful. Costa Rica has been traditionally the best expatriate community for the United States, but Costa Rica now is getting very expensive because of all the American dollars flowing in there. Belize is probably cheaper. El Salvador is cheaper. Guatemala is unsafe because they can't control the crime in that country right now. So those are some of my hints about Latin America. In South America, the best country down there is either Chile or Uruguay. Argentina is a corrupt state. I've lived in Argentina, Uruguay, and Chile, and other countries like that. I've lived in Central America, so I have personal experience in there, but it keeps changing. I've actually had a pretty good experience in Argentina, but believe me, I saw enough to know that it could change. The rules can change instantaneously because of the corruption in government and the fact that they're very leftist-oriented.
Well, there's the old saying, riches in Argentine, and they were once an extremely wealthy, good middle class, good values. The corruption has seeped in from the rest of South America, but it sounds like you're saying a lot of the expats I know that have moved to Chile, that's one of the better moves?
Yes, it is. And also Uruguay. Now, even though Uruguay has a leftist coalition which rules, it's much more benign than the Argentine version. They're much more open to foreign investment. They don't get into the global warming stuff. They believe in power plants. In fact, South America is starving itself of power and trying to boycott Uruguay because they're allowing power plants to move in near the coast there. They use the American dollar as well as the Uruguayan peso there. They're friendly to Americans. But still, remember that it's a long way away from the United States if you have to make it back someday. And ultimately, because Uruguay is surrounded by the very strong leftist countries of Brazil, which France has been ruled by two outright communists in a row. Now they're playing the moderate role like China is playing. But Lula da Silva was, in fact, the head of the communist guerrilla movement in all of South America, held an annual conference in Sao Paulo with the communist revolutionaries, even until last year when he came out of office, and he has a fellow communist woman leader now running the country. So,
all right, we're running out of time. This is all just incredibly interesting. Let's move to the next continent.
Okay. Well, let's see. We've covered Latin America.
We've covered Australia. What about Western Europe? I noticed the best place you've got listed there would be Spain or England, but they're all nuke targets, aren't they? Is Spain less so than England?
Spain really isn't a nuclear target, but England is, because England, I think, is the only European country to be taken down in a preemptive nuclear strike by Russia on the West. I think Russia intends to hold Europe hostage, trying to preserve it, and basically saying, if you want the same nuke attack on you, then just resist us. But I think the globalists will kick them into a resistance move, and there will be war in Europe. I think Switzerland will finally have to use their protection of the mountains and their bunker systems against the nuclear attack that will come. Spain has relatively always been untouched in both World War II. Switzerland actually bought their way out of World War II by holding Hitler's gold and making other compromising decisions. But Spain is the best country in terms of retreat if one is going to be in Europe, in my opinion.
Please continue.
Okay, let's go to the North American analysis. That slide talks about first climate and geography, and the slide I've got showing the temperature, base temperatures and humidity within the continent is very, very important, because climate and temperature is very important to a lot of people, and some people have health issues which don't allow them to stay within an area. But sadly, the best areas really in the country are where it's cold in the wintertime. You really can't get around that. But the warm areas attract the slow, the slovenly, and the people who are seeking for recreation, the people who are least able to handle hard times when it comes. And so there's a difference, of course, in the hot areas in the Arizona, Texas.
So you want to be close to rural, anti-New World Order, hard hillbillies.
That's right. Although in the South, you have a lot of those, but you don't. You have it's too close to the high-density population centers of the East and will get overwhelmed, in my opinion.
All right, stay there. We're going to come right back with Joel Skousen. I'm Alex Jones. We got two little segments left with him. It's obvious we'll have to do a part two in the future. Get the book at InfoWars.com. Stay with us.
On a long and lonesome highway, east of Omaha,
by the way, I just secured many of the remaining books that Joel's got. We've got some in stock, but they're going a lot faster than I thought. Looks like they might be sold out in a couple hours, but he's about to ship me some more, and then he's out. He's got a reprint. If you want to get it, it's Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, third edition. Everybody should at least think about this. And you've got time, but you need to start researching it now. And if you're going to stay in a major city, think about it. And at least think about things you can do there. And the book also covers that. I myself have moved outside the city, going on well, solar power. It's little basic things like that, and it's in increments what you can do to protect yourself. The biggest thing is firearms and, you know, having a wall around your house, security, dogs. I mean, there's a lot of things, but if there's total breakdown of society, and you're even, you know, 20 miles outside a major city in a rural area, you're going to get overrun. The authorities will come and try to confiscate what you got. It isn't perfect what I've done. It's far from that, but it's a little something. And so it's in increments. That's what the book Strategic Relocation covers, available at InfoWars.com or by calling 888-253-3139. Joel, continuing where you left off in the slides.
Okay, we were talking about climate and geography. There's a little secret that I point out in the book in terms of the best climate and geography for survival and for living in a colder climate, so that you're not, you know, extremely inconvenienced. If you run a line from western Montana all the way down through the point of Texas, you get a diagonal across the United States. That essentially runs with the line of the Rocky Mountains through Utah, Colorado. And to the west of that, you have 15-degree more moderate temperatures than you do to the east of that line. And that's because the cold Canadian continental air from up above swings down into the central United States and mixes up with that warm, humid air, creating your massive blizzards in the wintertime, your sweeping, bitter winds that come across the plain states, and the huge amounts of tornadoes that plague the southern and central states, Texas, Oklahoma, et cetera, because of that. But you don't have hardly any of those once you stay on that diagonal line to the west. And that's why the best long-term climates for survival, and it's also important to consider humidity. Humidity is a problem, both without air conditioning and because of the molds and insects that are bred where you don't get cold winters. But that's why Utah and Idaho and parts of New Mexico, northern Arizona, Colorado, Wyoming, western Montana received the higher ratings. Next slide goes and shows the population density maps of the United States, and there we can see in much more detail how heavily populated the eastern seaboard is. And this also, because of the population centers in the Midwest as well, shows why the Midwest will get compromised. Even though there's a tremendous amount of great areas in the Ozark Mountains and other places in rural Tennessee and rural Missouri, Oklahoma, and even in Texas, the northern southern states, all of these are at risk of having the massive population densities flee out of the cities because they'll be the first ones to melt down when there isn't enough food, water, or supplies. And they'll start fleeing westward, and that ends up compromising those. That's one of the reasons why the Intermountain West area is the highest rated area in my analysis, because it has this 800 miles from San Francisco. It's 700 miles from Los Angeles over trackless deserts.
Joel, we're almost out of time. We're going to do a little bit more into the next segment, maybe even go into more overdrive, but we're both busy. But I want people to be able to see and hear all this in one concise piece. But I want to ask you questions like, I know it's not perfect for everybody, but where would you live? Or where are the elites moving? Or what are they doing? And I want to ask some of those basic questions after this one-minute break. All the questions are answered in Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, third edition. Get it while you can, InfoWars.com. Well, we covered a lot of territory, but I'd guess we got 25% into the book. We're going to schedule a second interview where we just basically run through, recap what we already covered, then get into all the other areas in the next few weeks with Joel Skousen in a part two. The book is Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, third edition. And Joel, just in closing, some basic quick questions I've got. Where do you live? I mean, generally.
Well, I follow my own advice. I moved from Oregon, which is challenging California, a socialist state of the union, in terms of restrictive property laws and things, to Utah, because this is that state that is the furthest away from all of these population threats and through trackless wilderness and desert. It's just almost impossible for people without fuel, food, and other facilities to get from Los Angeles up to Utah, and the same thing from Sacramento or San Francisco or from Seattle, any of those major, even Denver is 500 miles away through the most difficult mountain pass.
And there's also a culture up there of people who are into being prepared and self-sufficient, so you don't have to worry as much about them coming and trying to rob you.
Yeah, that's right. And there is a knit-togetherness to the Mormon population there that even if state government breaks down, they have that church hierarchy, which maintains order. And that doesn't mean that everyone has to be a Mormon. In fact, they're very open to other people coming in. But it means that the base population will remain stable and not riot and not panic as much as other communities. And that's why there's going to be, I believe, more stability there. But that doesn't mean that everybody has to move to Utah. Everybody can. I really stress and cover the worst thing that people did in Y2K, and I warned against this, but they did it anyway. They ran out into the most rural areas, sold everything, quit their jobs, and then they were calling me up in droves, after Y2K and said, well, now what do I do? I've run out of money. Self-sufficiency is a lot more expensive than I thought. And I say, well, you're going to have to go back and reestablish your financial lifeline and do it all over again. And that's why it's very important for people to realize that you can't just do this all in one step. Sometimes you have to take two.
No, you
got to
think it out. And you know, something the globalist type is not ever going to be the real threat. The real threat's going to come like a thief in the night. Now, the elites, and it's even admitted in CNN, they're building, even if they stay in cities, big underground bunkers, arming themselves. All these former government people, what are they doing? I mean, I know a lot of them are going to Utah, Wyoming, Montana.
And Colorado. A lot of them have built resorts cabins, very luxurious cabins, in the ski resorts of Colorado. And the reason they do that is because Denver, this is not a recommended city, Denver's the western center of the New World Order globalists. They have bunkers there. They have a power center.
It's the admitted alternate government.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Denver is a very bad place, and that's why a lot of these ex-CIA, ex-NSA, and Army and government officials who know that a nuclear war is coming have built big underground bunkers. They're not telling the American people. They don't want us prepared, but they themselves are preparing. And I have run into numerous contractors who I've worked with in Colorado who have told me, can drive down the street in Aspen and other areas and say, there's a bunker in that house, there's a bunker there, he's former NSA, he's CIA. I mean, these people know something, and it's just criminal that they don't tell the American people.
Where are the elites running abroad?
Well, a lot of them are in Switzerland. A lot of them are in northern Italy, in Germany, in the Alps. They're following what Hitler did. Bavaria is full of them. And they're also going to Latin America. A lot of them in South America, around Buenos Aires. Some of them in Brazil. Those areas in Argentina, they expect, I think, to try to control, but they're down there as well.
Yeah, I know the Rockefellers have really been moving and building houses and buying up land in Argentina.
Yeah, the Bushes have built and got a big chunk of land down there in Paraguay. I don't think that's going to serve them very well, but that's where they are.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of acres. So is Ted Turner. Well, amazing presentation. Joel Skousen, 2 or 3 weeks from now, we'll set up a second part of the slideshow, go through it all, but we got a big chunk of it out of the way. But folks, do your own research. Do whatever you can in degrees to mitigate the dangers of this world and all the stresses that are only intensifying and the dollar devaluation. An economic collapse for me is what I'm worried about, not tsunamis, not earthquakes. The nuclear war is down the road. Strategic relocation available at InfoWars.com. Get them while you can. They're selling out quick. Joel, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Alex.
Stay with us. Retransmission.